This is Cascadia Public Radio.
It's time to say, it's time to say, let's go, yeah! Hey, how you doing? Welcome to Unbought and Unbossed Canadian Political News and Views. This is show number 163. Today is March the 3rd, 2010. Unbought and Unbossed is an independent voice dedicated to presenting and discussing the political and social issues most relevant to Canadian citizens. This radio show contends that the self-inflicted attacks of 9/11 are being used as the justification for the current overthrow of our democratic and sovereign nationhood, turning Canada into a corporate-driven plutocracy. The official story of the 9/11 terror attacks and the ensuing war of terror are deeply troubling and are at the forefront of this radio program. I strongly encourage listeners to question what you think you know about today's world events and to analyze the motives behind our traditional news sources. Each week, new segments of Unbought and Unbossed offer further evidence for these incredible claims, which are either ignored or distorted by the mainstream corporate media. Turn your televisions off. You are being lied to and conditioned to accept this madness as our inevitable future. We must work to return the future of the human race to its rightful owners. That's you. Our every freedom is at stake in this battle for truth and accountability. The prize is nothing less than the health of our collective human soul. Hey, how goes it, everyone? Glad to be back here. Glad to be back. That, of course, was Bruce Coburn with Action Speak Louder. Right now we have DJ Shadow, going to be followed by Ashley McIsaac. As I tell you, what's on this week? What's on this week? Well, we finished off last show with an in-studio interview with Jeremy from the Vancouver Anti-Poverty Committee. We were discussing Black Bloc tactics at the February 13th protest, Olympic protest in Vancouver. Things got pretty exciting. As a matter of fact, Jeremy is with me again right now. Jeremy, how you doing, brother? Oh, I'm sorry. I'll try that again, man.
I said it's great to be here.
Nice, nice. Yep. Thank you. What happened last time, we got a bunch of callers. There seemed to be a lot of response to the topic of, I guess, defending the more, well, we discussed whether it was violent or whether it was vandalism. I think I agree that it was certainly vandalism.
That's one of the many points of contention. It's true.
Yeah, yeah. So thanks. You know what? At the end of the show, I said, damn, that could have gone on much longer, and it's going to go on for a little bit longer now. So Jeremy will be back with us before long to continue that discussion. What is a protest? What is a successful protest? What doesn't work as a protest? Different things like that. Where are we going? Perhaps is a violent, bloody revolution the only way we're going to get back our countries, and I'm starting to think, yay. Jeremy, you got any thoughts on that? Is violent protest the only way to have a true revolution?
Well, I did say last time about, you know, my mother's old quote that Canadian politics has a reputation for being very polite, and I would say polite to a fault.
Yeah.
I think it's going to have to get a lot more serious if you want to see, you know, proactive, effective change in the near future.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know whether that involves bloody revolution, as you say. I'd hate to lapse into melodrama here, but
we're
going to have to get more serious.
We're going to talk more about that for sure. That's an important topic. Okay, Jeremy, we'll be back with it shortly. Okay, also, in the second hour, looking at my outline here, I've got a fantastic audio clip from Frank Zappa. This is 1984. He was on the TV show Music Box, and in this interview, he talked about race-specific bioweapons, in particular AIDS. And this is 84, so this is right at the beginning. And Frank Zappa, damn, if he doesn't say some things that the powers that be have never wanted to hear, and good for him. The topics also include on what it is to be an American, as well as the future of humanity. So, a little bit of light reading there for you. Also, last week, I want to bring on two contemporary intellectuals who are having this tit-for-tat little public spat because one of them is a 9/11 truther and the other is not. So that's kind of an interesting thing. And, you know, I've had some pressure that let's bring the 9/11 back into my show. So that's what it's supposed to be about. Carrying on, we're more than likely going to conclude the show with Maude Barlow. Well, she's got water on her brain now, doesn't she? This is an interview from Grit TV with Laura Flanders. Now, Maude Barlow is a Canadian author and activist. She's the national chairperson of the Council of Canadians, a citizens' advocacy organization with members in chapters across Canada. Well, you know, that's all fine and good, and they are certainly a fence-sitter. They don't go any further than public discourse will allow them, and that's rather frustrating. And Maude, well, you know, she's like so many of these fence-sitters that I have a lot of respect for their research, and they bring it to the table to a certain degree, and they don't go any further, probably because they know they would no longer remain in the public spotlight if they were to cross that line. So it is obviously a very fine line to balance. Maude Barlow and the Council of Canadians is a really good example of that. They will not touch 9/11. They will touch sovereignty, Canadian sovereignty, but not on the New World Order, the larger perspective of the pyramid scheme of power that I believe is going down. She's looking at the smaller pyramids of power. And, again, not taking it all the way, but I'm not saying that she doesn't, you know, this water issue, she's probably, if you want to talk about that, she's maybe the foremost expert on the planet. So, you know, she's Canadian, it's Canadian content, and I had a complaint that they don't want to hear American stuff. So, well, I probably won't get to this, but just in case, I do hear some American content. Keith Olbermann of MSNBC, he is bang on 99% of the time. I can't believe that he's still on TV. He's the truth he's giving, and he's talking in this special commentary about the corporate states of America, and good for him. Okay, well, I got to get to the weather update, so let's bring that up. That means changing the song as well. Let's get the little piggies on. And also to Michael of Hornby Island Painting. Do I have a phone number for you, brother? Yes, I do. Michael was in studio last week. That's the first time he sat in. And unfortunately, you know, he came with notes and a binder of goodies, and we did not get into any topic, just him and I. And I kind of feel bad, but it was poor Debbie Newhook, she came on as well, and she got in exactly 7.5 words in the last half hour, and I didn't feel too good about that either. So here's spreading some love around, and Michael, thanks for coming down, buddy. You can do it anytime. Okay. Well, I think we're about there. Now, how I literally ended the show last week was about a minute and a half of this young activist woman, Dawn Powley, as she defends the protesters' non-peaceful tactics. I'm going to play that in its entirety, and that will get us into the conversation with Jeremy, who is in the studio. He is a sympathizer with the Black Bloc techniques. He is also with the Vancouver Anti-Poverty Committee. We'll find out more about him and maybe where his activism started and things like that. We'll take his mask off. How about that? That's a pretty good way to say it. Also, this whole thing started by a real upset listener of the show, and I'm going to read a very small part of this letter. So that's kind of what you're going to get. When we get into the conversation with Jeremy, phone lines will be open, so you can take part as well, and hopefully there'll be someone in the audience that agrees with Jeremy and the Black Bloc techniques and the more vandalistic style of protest. Hopefully, that's right. Okay, friends, so again, back to the Vancouver Media Co-op. This is who she's with, Dawn Pally, as she defends protesters' non-peaceful tactics. This is 9 minutes long. She has a lot of powerful things to say, as a matter of fact. So give this a listen. This will soften you up a little bit, and that's what we're going to do. Okay, friends, we'll see you in a couple minutes. Be well out there.
Thanks, everyone. Not exactly the context that I expected to be presenting in this evening, but regardless, I want to thank everyone at Vivo for opening this space, and I think that regardless of how we see things and regardless of how we feel about what's happening tonight, it's really important that this discussion is happening on our own terms right now. So thank you to the folks at Vivo, and also thank you to everyone from the Olympics Resistance Network who made this weekend convergence possible, and thank you to all the volunteers from the Vancouver Media Cooperative who are with us this evening. I want to say that I walked unmasked on Saturday alongside the Black Bloc, and that I taped some of the actions that happened. And at one moment, I got separated from the Black Bloc because the police did use, you know, they had massive weapons, and I think calling them a peace officer is ridiculous. It's kind of Orwellian language. It's part of the Orwellian language that is becoming more and more common now, where it's basically say one thing and do the exact opposite. Regardless, so the Black Bloc folks were kind of isolated, and I ended up trapped with a bunch of people who had walked unmasked along with that march on that day. And there was a CCTV reporter, bleached blonde hair, just like all made up and stuff, and she had her microphone, and she was getting in everyone's face, and what she was saying is, "Why are you so angry? Why are you so angry?" And so, and I was supposed to be media, and, you know, we normally shouldn't be commenting on things, but I said to her, we are here because this is stolen land, and the reason that this happened today is because this is stolen land, and this convergence was called, it's an anti-capitalist, if you don't put that on TV, then you're a fucking liar. Like, I had a lot of adrenaline, right? And I said this on camera. And I said, if you don't put that on TV, you're a fucking liar. But that's why we're here. And of course, they didn't put it on TV, you know, to no surprise. And so that's going to be sort of my intro to just what I want to very briefly discuss this evening, which is the role of Vancouver Media Cooperative moving forward in Vancouver. And I think that we do have a role to play in the city, and we didn't set up just to be part of this convergence and to you know, act as a means of communication during the convergence, but we actually are here in the city, and we want to remain here permanently. And I think that one of the roles that we can have is actually this idea of enabling horizontal communication. And I'm going to borrow some ideas from Robert Hackett, who is a professor of communications at Simon Fraser University. And he talks about three specific things the media can do in order to enable sort of a radical or deep democracy. He talks about the role of media in enabling horizontal communications between subordinate groups, including social movements, as agents of democratic renewal. He talks about the role of media in expanding the scope of public awareness and political choice by reporting events and voices which are socially important but outside or even opposed to the agendas of elites. And the third is counteracting power inequalities found in other spheres of the social order. And he quotes someone saying, unless communication and information are biased towards equality, they tend to enhance social inequality. I think it's important, again, like I said, that we're here tonight and we're having this discussion, this debate on our own terms. I think that the role that hopefully the Vancouver Media Cooperative can have going forward is enabling horizontal communications between different people who are part of these movements, that we shouldn't be talked down to constantly by the mainstream media, that we shouldn't gauge success of actions through the mainstream media, because if that's what we're doing, if that is how we're going to gauge our success, then dropping the banner off the bridge for half an hour with the permission of the integrated security unit and rolling it back up and putting it away would be considered a success, and I don't think that's acceptable. I think that we need to gauge our success in discussions with each other and really build this movement beyond just PR stunts and public relations. For example, in the environmental side of what's happened around the Olympics is that it's become very clear that land defenders and grassroots people who are actually fighting environmental destruction in their communities have since the beginning stood with the Olympic resistance movement and denounced everything that's happening on their territories or in their backyards and highway expansion and all this shit that's happening. And all of the funded groups, and that was at one point kind of realizing, all the groups that are receiving money have really shut their mouths around the Olympics. And the people who don't have money and the people who are coming from a grassroots perspective have been willing to speak out. And so we see now, we see that, like, Greenpeace, for example, has just named Sephora Berman as their chief climate campaigner. And this is a woman who is shaking hands with Gordon Campbell, like Harjot said. It's like the resistance to the Olympics has allowed us to see these contradictions and to really realize who our allies are in this movement. And I just think that it's vital that we do not allow our discussions and the success of our actions and the reflections that we're having around our movement to be mediated by the mainstream media. That's the very last thing that I want to touch on, is basically the media structure. So, and I think it's almost something that has been ignored in some way by the resistance movements to the Olympics, but the way the International Olympic Committee actually makes most of their money is through selling broadcasting rights. That is really their cash cow, and it's by far the largest revenue source that they have, selling exclusive broadcasting rights to national broadcasters around the world. And at this point, you know, CTV is the national broadcaster here in Canada, the Olympics, and NBC in the U.S. And what I feel like we're seeing right now is that basically CTV, VanOck, and the COPs are like one entity. It's one entity. They have full consolidation. And so we know that CTV is giving footage to the COPs, and we know that the COPs are responding directly to the needs and desires of VanOck. And I just feel that having had so many discussions with progressive people about, like, how is it that the right wing, even though they have divisions within them, are managed to be so coherent and somehow gain a united position. And I feel like that has a lot to do with, when you look at this example, you have VanOck, the COPs, and CTV. They've fully consolidated their media along with the different elements of society, and that's something that we have sort of been told as I'm a student at UBC and doing a master's of journalism, and like this idea of objectivity, and I think that alternative journalists take that a lot more to heart than mainstream journalists, because we want to really try to be objective and we want to really try to, you know, represent things as truly as possible. But what we really need to do is actually, hopefully with the Vancouver Media Cooperative, is move towards a space where our media space is active directly with the social movements, and that we're helping with the consolidation and the discussion that's going to be happening within our movement so that we can actually move things forward. So I just want to encourage everyone to check out the Vancouver Media Co-op. It's an open platform. Everyone in this room is able to create an account and post their article. And that we want to create a space for reflection so that we're not going to be depending on the mainstream media to tell us whether a broken window is the same thing as, you know, killing somebody or whatever kind of ridiculous thing about this violence. I mean, it's just, after Saturday, after the march, they left those windows just sitting there, and there was just a feeding frenzy by the mainstream media that was coming out gorging on these windows. Delicious feast of anarchist vandalism that they could put all over their newscasts or whatever. But thing is, it's not separate from the movement, and they have not been willing to actually take the time. I mean, we have put out so much information. The Olympics Resistance Network has done the same thing, and like through the Dominion and the Vancouver Media Cooperative, so many reasons why there is this dissent. And of course, the mainstream media is not going to go there. They are COP TV, CTV. So I think I'm going to end that.
I didn't edit that very well. But that was a lot of people that stood and clapped and appreciated what's the young woman's name? Dawn Pally of the Vancouver Media Co-op. So that is a intended to be a segue into this discussion, talking about non-peaceful tactics. And as I told you last week, I got a fantastic letter in the email box. So let me tell you about this, because basically what I said is that I'm expecting a lot of police, a lot of agent provocateurs, and just like in Montebello, and not. It seems like there was a lot more people turned out than I initially thought from what I had seen on the. On the internet videos. Okay, so this is the letter. I'm going to keep the identity of this this mail to themselves. They are within listening range. So, dear sir, I am a regular listener and appreciate and respect the work that you do and the program that you host. I caught part of your comments on the anti-Olympic actions of February 13th. I am thoroughly disgusted and enraged at your suggestion that people should take it upon themselves to demask and photograph protesters. There we go. Guilty of that, aren't I? I was unfortunately unable to make it to Vancouver for the weekend's events, but I know many of the Bloc members who had taken part in that and in similar and much larger actions in the past. Your programming obviously displays an inability, an ability, he's giving me a compliment here, kind of backhanded, you know, I'm being patted on one end and slapped on the other. Your programming obviously displays an ability to critique the power structure of the state and capitalism, which makes it all the more frustrating. Now, one more paragraph here before I get Jeremy on, and this is, according to this person, I guess kind of a historical breakdown of the Bloc and how it came about. So he's taking me to school here, isn't he? He says, the Black Bloc is not a name, is not the name of any particular group. It is a tactic. It originated in Germany in the 1980s among the autonomous movement, which engaged in squatting, establishing housing projects of youth outside the control of state or landlords, as well as cultural initiatives such as non-profit entertainment venues, as well as anti-fascist work, as well as engaging in militant protests against those that would destroy our world, the politicians and capitalists and their enforcers. It arose because in collectively remaining anonymous, it made it much harder for police to target individuals for arrest, persecution, and jailing. It does not imply that all the people amassed are engaging in any specific tactic. It implies a level of solidarity, and that's an important thing here we're probably going to touch on again, among those in the Bloc. Most of us have come to an understanding, unfortunately, all too often from painful experience, that the police do not like protesters. More than disliking protesters, they do not like their control to be challenged. This, indeed, is the central point of the existence of police, to control a certain area of the state. And when the control is challenged, the results can be brutally violent. Acting in unison with your friends, associates, and like-minded companions can give a much stronger force and confidence to your actions than acting as atomized individuals. Acting anonymously can also facilitate greater challenges to the power of the state. I'd like to welcome back to the air Jeremy. Thanks for coming down again, continuing this conversation. Are there any thoughts about this letter here? Does that ring true? Would you have written something similar to that?
Oh, absolutely. It's a kindred spirit right there.
Okay. So, yeah, I suggested taking photographs of goons hiding their identity to find out which ones were cops. I'm new to this. You know, this is fairly new to Canada.
And you've retracted it, and you've admitted you've handled the whole thing like a champ, as far as I'm concerned, sir. It's all a learning process, right?
Oh, absolutely, man. And I'd like to think that I'm learning every day, and I sure as hell don't know. I don't know a lot, you know, but I'm trying to gain a little bit more knowledge. And like I sometimes say on this show, come with me as I learn history, you know, and let's learn it together, right? Because it's coming down before our eyes, isn't it?
Good stuff. And, you know, unfortunately, it's a trend in this part of the world that folks just aren't familiar with what they're seeing. And I think that's where a lot of the more emotional reactions to the events of February the 13th are coming from, is just a complete lack of a reference point and inability to process it.
Yeah. I think the main thing is that the other protesters, which I guess a lot of people would say legitimate, even though that doesn't really mean anything, the peaceful style of protesters are fearing that the more violent protesters are giving them all a bad name. Do you agree with that? What's your thoughts on that?
I certainly understand what they're saying, and I remember I was accused of that a few times last time I was on the show, just not getting the arguments that were being put to me, and I want to clear that up. I don't want anybody mistaking my disagreeing with them profoundly for a lack of comprehension. I understand. I've had this discussion in excess of 50 times in the last 3 weeks, and I would be amazed if somebody could bring a fresh perspective to me tonight. I'd love it. I'll buy them a beer. Throw the gauntlet down on that one. And I also want to point out that, you know, February the 13th, as much as I'm full of bravado about the whole thing, it was a very, very small fraction of the work the ORN has done for the last 2+ years and longer. And I don't want it to... I mean, it's unfortunate that the mainstream media blows it all out of proportion into this huge thing that eclipses everything else that everybody's doing. But, you know, you can't hold the anarchists to a task for that. We don't have any say in how our stuff is presented. Although I am media literate, I did know it was going to go down that way. I went in with full knowledge that we were going to get plastered all over the screens and it was going to be, you know, all voyeuristic and... Anyway, yeah.
Right. Okay, so this action is fairly new to Canada, yes?
Well, in this part of Canada. I know you go to Quebec, and those folks would run a clinic on me for how to get this kind of stuff done.
Right, yeah, true enough. There you go. My buddy John Boncour, Splitting the Sky, you might know of him. He was arrested last March, coming up on a year now, for mm-hmm. attempting to place George W. Bush under citizen's arrest, and there was no... everyone's very violent. There was a couple of arrests. One dude was throwing thongs at not even at any one in particular, just throwing a thong, lobbing it, and you know, and then he was arrested. So you know, he
is
was
that
I
in
guess,
the spirit of the shoe throwing, the famous.
Yes,
shoe
it was exactly. So you know, that was about as violent as that got, save for Splitting the Sky, who did break the police line, and you know, within a fraction of a second, was taken down, and you know, later roughed up in jail, and he's got a court appearance coming up this month in Calgary.
Yeah, his bravery is very humbling, to say the least.
Right. Now, well, let's talk about that, the bravery of breaking a police line with your hands open and in the air, showing that there's no ill intent, other than I am coming into this zone, versus throwing a mailbox through a storefront.
Well, I'd say that both of them are powerful symbols. I would never pretend that what we did on the 13th is even in the same league as what Splitting the Sky did. I'd say that his courage is quantum leaps. It's apples and oranges, but I guess you could argue, I mean, I know interacting with police, if you even so much as elbow one of them accidentally trying to push by them, that's assault PO, as far as they're concerned. Mm-hmm. So regardless of whether you're breaking windows, hurling projectiles at a speed that's actually going to hurt somebody, or whether you're just sneezing on them, it's all assault PO, as far as they're concerned. They don't care. Mm-hmm. It's just a question of how badly they want to put your feet to the fire.
Okay. Can you take us back a little bit historically? For example, you mentioned Greece last week. Can you put this into perspective and what Canada might see coming in the future if what's been going down in Europe for a generation comes and is more prevalent here in the West?
I've got some stats here. One that pops out of me is Canadian youth unemployment. Currently it's 17%, which is double the total unemployment stat for the country. That's if you trust the official employment numbers, which I don't. I wouldn't recommend anybody do.
Right.
But, I mean, there's going to be a lot of angry kids. There's going to be more and more of them as time goes on. There's no jobs. There's no future. We keep getting told to just go back to school and go back to school and get deeper and deeper into debt, and then we get out of school and there's still no jobs.
Yeah.
And, I guess if I could do anything tonight, would be a word of warning to the baby boomers that they are going to be triggering a groundswell of anger and resentment among folks my age and younger, and it's going to just grow more and more severe as time goes on.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on in Greece right now, I consider a sort of canary in the coal mine because, their economy is in shambles. Sort of a more exacerbated version of the crash that affected the entire world. And so there you see a whole generation of youth coming up who have been radicalized by the fact that they, you know, it's just self-evident to them that they have no options and no future, at least within the current capitalist paradigm. And they get angry, and they start to do stuff that's a little more proactive than just marching through the streets and chanting. And I think it's a natural progression. And like I say, I just think we're going to see more and more of that as time goes on.
Mm-hmm. That lends me to the idea, which I mentioned at the beginning, of violent revolution. I'm trying to think of peaceful revolutions. We might think of Gandhi, perhaps. You know, Martin Luther King is also often thrown into that same thing. But, of course, you know, the struggle and fight literally, well, was certainly not peaceful for the black right movement in the United States.
It's true.
Even though its, you know, so-called leader, at least as history is telling us now, you know, is said to practice non-violent protest.
Well, I know I'm going to make some friends with this one, but as far as Gandhi goes, I believe if we check the history books on that one, you find that the British Empire was already bled white by a lot of other things that it was doing at the time. It was an empire in decline, and, I mean, I don't want to take anything away from what Gandhi did, but he was in the right place in the right time, as much as anything. And whether or not you could affect that same change that same way in a completely different set of circumstances, I don't know. I honestly don't know.
You'd have to say that there's something that could be learned, and it's certainly worthy of investigation, I hope.
Absolutely. And I said this last time I was on the show. I do spend 99% of my time doing nonviolent political work. So this particular incident with the Black Bloc was a... it's just not what I spend most of my time doing. I hand out free food, I table, I try and spread the word as often as... I spend about a third of my time writing and talking about these issues. I wish there was more Black Bloc actions going on, and like I say, I foresee a future where there will be, but it isn't what I spend most of my time doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What did the more violent... Oh, we got a phone call. Very well. I will be taking phone calls tonight, so let's see what this caller has to say. Hey, welcome to CHLY. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi, thanks. Who's this?
It's Tina.
Hi, Tina. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, greetings to you both.
Hi. Thank you.
I think a point that some of us more pacifist labeled protesters would like to make is the protest, according to my understanding, was meant to be peaceful, positive, stuff like that, more like informational. And then
we're talking about the demo on the Saturday.
On the 13th or the 12th, or the
yeah.
Black Bloc whole scenario thing.
Unfortunately, okay. I'm sorry. Continue. Finish
okay, thanks. The thing that I'd just like to point out is that it was the word hijack kind of comes to mind.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It kind of took a lot of people who were there totally by surprise. And I see your point about using these tactics, right? Much as I don't personally fully agree, but I can understand where you're coming from.
Could I speak to your
partner? Sure, yeah.
Okay, well, unfortunately, and I've come across this a few times talking about this, that was one of the headlines that got plastered around by the Vancouver province, among other mainstream media establishments, and it's simply not true. That protest wasn't hijacked. I was involved in organizing it from the get-go. I talked to the organizers days before it happened, and it was never intended to be a peaceful protest. That was nobody hijacked anything. We set out with the express purpose. There was a media release that morning. Actually, I don't know if you're familiar with Squatchy, the anti-Olympic mascot. Sort of looks like Quachi, except he's got the squat symbol on him. Anyway, he did a very compelling speech under the Main Street SkyTrain station that morning about what we were setting out to do. And unfortunately, I didn't see it played anywhere. I think probably because the audio was really bad. The traffic drowned out most of what he had to say. But, that protest was supposed to be exactly what it was.
But I think that most of the people who were there were under a different understanding.
I don't... I was there, and I would have to disagree. I mean,
well,
there was a handful of folks.
A handful of folks, come on.
A handful
versus 5,000 other people who were there under a totally different...
Oh, no, 5,000 was the day before. That was the Friday night demonstration where we marched down to GM Place and parked out in front of it, and that was a peaceful demo for the most part. I actually had to hold some of the anarchists back on Friday night.
This is the one where there was, like, thousands of people...
From the art gallery?
Didn't that all happen on the same day?
No, there was 2 days in a row, and the breaking glass was the 13th, the second of the two.
Bright and early Saturday morning was the funny business. Friday was a very powerful, peaceful protest. I enjoyed being a part of that. Right from the morning when we were doing stuff around the torch relay all the way through to the evening in front of GM Place, and... like I say, I did have to hold some anarchists back because we had an express agreement with local indigenous elders that we weren't going to cause a bunch of stuff on the Friday night.
Well, this kind of confuses me about the dates then, because on the show just before this one, there were people there who were there.
On the Friday night?
On the Black Block Day.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying that most of the people who were there were like a broad mix of the population, and they were getting tourists involved in conversation about the issues. I was keeping tabs on the radio through that media, and
that was going
they
on
were
too.
They were giving us really positive feedback about that protest that day, and then of course the Black Bloc thing happened. And what I'm saying is that maybe if that is going to be the mode that people wish to express themselves, maybe they could separate from the other people who do not wish to be a part of that, instead of like taking advantage of a whole situation like that. Like, there's all these other people, and then there's a handful of people.
So you're suggesting if to separate the two protests, the more peaceful with those that are going to be less peaceful. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, yeah. If the anarchists want to go out there and smash the shit out of stuff, okay, go and make your statement. Fine. You know, go right ahead.
But you're not hearing them,
mothers and the daughters and the children and the elders and all of us don't want to be associated with that, and you kind of take away our expression of peace.
I understand what you're saying, but I mean, we've been over this already once. I feel like I'm repeating myself at this stage. We planned several different demonstrations over the course of that weekend, most of which were agreed ahead of time to be nonviolent demonstrations, and the Saturday morning was the exception. And when most of that march formed up under the main and terminal SkyTrain station at approximately 8:30 that morning, I believe, when I looked around, I saw an awful lot of kids in masks and a handful of folks not wearing masks. There was at least 200 masked-up anarchists, or, you know, folks of like minds, and they were there for obviously what that protest was about, and it was advertised as such.
So is 8:30 in the morning when they started throwing stuff around and breaking all the glass?
Well, no, because we had to march over to Hastings,
right.
And then we marched up Hastings and ended up
right.
downtown.
And then met up with all the other thousands of people.
Well, I wish there was thousands on that day.
Yeah, that was much smaller.
That was only a few hundred people tops.
Okay, well, I'll keep listening.
Yeah, Tina, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good day.
There was a discussion on the Internet after last week's show, as a matter of fact, on there's a Facebook channel for the Unbought and Unbossed radio show, so you can look that up right now if you want to see it yourself. Tina, in fact, did make some rather wise comments. And I'm going to read one of them. She says, the cure for apathy is not vandalism. And that's a much deeper statement than you know, those six words suggest. Apathy, I want to
expand,
is perhaps our problem. You know, let's say that 15% of the general population is down with, reality as this radio show suggests reality is. You know, that things are not the way the corporate sponsors tell us it is. So the point I believe she's making is, how is vandalism going to increase that 15% to 85, where maybe it would have a much stronger impact on the state and its police force that protects the powers of the state? You dig what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm definitely not going to sit here and try and tell your intelligent listeners that smashing a few windows is going to create a utopia overnight, that suddenly all of the cops and politicians are going to get together and say, oh, you know what? We were wrong, and you anarchists were right, and clearly we've been shown the error of our way, and, you know, so on and so forth. It was a publicity stunt. A small-scale Black Bloc action is ultimately a publicity stunt. It's a few other things, depending on the anarchists you ask, because you're never going to get more opinions than in a Black Bloc. But it's a publicity stunt. And like I say, I'm sorry, I said this last time on the show, I think one of the barometers was the web traffic on the Olympic Resistance Network websites. We saw a huge spike.
Hold on to your thought. I'm going to take a caller.
Of course.
Caller, are you on the air? Can you hold on for 30 seconds, please?
Okay.
Thank you. Did you want to finish your thoughts?
These are obviously very difficult things to measure, public reaction and, you know, positive and negative. I don't know how you get your finger on that pulse, to be honest, but one of the only tangible things I've found is that web traffic report from the Olympic Resistance Network talking about how on Friday. Like I say, I was there for a lot of very powerful, peaceful demonstrations. I saw folks working together. It filled my heart. It really did. I'm going to try not to get cheesy on you guys, but Friday was a great day for me. And then Saturday morning, we went out and did something very, very different. And I think it accomplished its goal, too.
And it felt like a great day to you as well, or?
For very different reasons. And then I saw the huge media coverage, and it's ripples in the pond. No such thing as bad publicity. I'd hate to start throwing marketing logic out there, but.
Okay, interesting. Caller, what have you to say?
Well, I have to disagree with, and publicity is better than no publicity argument, because that does nothing to impress upon people to join the movement. All that does is turns people away.
I think it does both. It depends on which people we're talking about.
Well, I think that's a very valid point.
Yeah.
Well, if we wanna do something about the apathetic nature of the general Canadian population, I do not believe that Black Bloc tactics is going to appeal to them. It'll appeal to anarchists. People, believers.
Well, you know, I wasn't always an anarchist. At one point, I was a pacifist moderate myself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, I saw kids out there.
Of course, people come from somewhere, right? Like,
that's right.
Everybody
that's
evolves.
Right.
I can understand that. And and I'm not trying to exactly downplay the tactics exactly, because I can kind of see. Maybe there's a point to it, you know. Maybe there is a time, and I will definitely say there is, more importantly, a place.
Hmm.
And I don't know. I'm just thinking that it was a real opportunity lost, ruined, because of all the negative media attention that was garnered because of that tactic.
Caller, I appreciate what you're saying. However, I'm not exactly sure I agree with you. What would have been gained had the Black Bloc not showed up that day?
Would we even still be having this conversation right now?
Well, obviously not, but what would have, you know, would
well,
the Olympics...
Well, who's to say? What do you mean, obviously not? You can't say obviously not.
I can be a cynic after years of politicking.
Well, there was a lot of positive action ruined.
I don't think
like,
it was.
Not ruined, okay? Maybe not ruined, but... taken out of sight by this. It
Certainly.
Was like a distraction.
Eclipse,
a distraction tactic by the media by focusing on that tactic.
Yeah, I agree with you on that for sure.
And so I think we might have lost a lot of support that we could have had if we had kept things a little more civil.
But what kind of support, though? I mean, aren't we talking about the folks that are just sitting at home and not actually going to come out into the street either way, like regardless of whether they're sitting at home talking about whether they support
well,
or don't support the movement?
Well, that gets us into a whole other facet of the discussion. And that is, what exactly do protests on the street accomplish anyway?
Good point.
Besides making a lot of noise, people going out for an afternoon, banging on some drums, and you know, singing to the choir. Right?
And
most of the people who are there are already aware of those issues. And the thing is with the peaceful thing, we did have people, tourists, who were engaging in the conversation with the peaceful people. Black Bloc tactics do nothing to encourage those kind of conversations.
That's true. It's very difficult to have a conversation with a tourist through a ski mask. I can admit that. But, I mean, aren't we talking... Like, the thing is, both things are true. I mean, we had these powerful, peaceful protests that went on as well, which I was also a part of, like I said. And, like you say, it was that dialogue. And, I mean, how much of an effect that has, again, it's really hard to measure these things. But I had powerful experiences on both sides of that fence, and I think there's a place for both tactics and many more tactics besides.
Okay, caller, let me play the devil's advocate here. Caller, let's say in 10 or 15 years the continued economic hardship hits its stride, as many are suggesting that what we're seeing right now is just a warm-up of a collapse of international finances.
Have you ever heard of FEMA?
Yep.
FEMA camps?
Of course.
Yeah, okay, so people like this end up in FEMA camps.
Well, unfortunately, people like me as well that are nonviolent as well, caller. You know, anyone speaking against the establishment is just as guilty of you know, being... a pain
so,
in the ass.
Okay, so right. So there will come a time when positive action, proactive action for something better will eclipse the Black Bloc tactics, the protests, the dissent.
Well, not on CBC, it won't.
Well, it's going to have to come somewhere, and unfortunately, a lot of people are going to have to suffer before they realize that, guess what? Bashing and looting and beating the crap out of each other and all that stuff isn't going to do us any good. It's not going to do us any good. It's not going to build us communities. It's not going to help us feed each other. It's going to put a lot of us in jail, is what it's going to do.
Well, I do have friends that just recently got out of jail for this.
Well, lucky for them.
yeah, and you're absolutely right that, in terms of who's getting dragged off to the FEMA camps first, it would probably be the rowdy anarchists. I can't disagree with that. But, again, I have to reiterate that I think there's a place for all different types of tactics going on at the same time. I want to see those people out there, you know, practicing how to grow your own vegetables in your backyard. And, like, I want to see all of that as well as the rowdy militant protests. I think it all has to be going on, and I think we have to be looking out for one another.
Well, I mean,
okay,
groovy is groovy, caller, but at some point, where I was going with is that let's just pretend in 15 years from now the economic conditions have multiplied many times over. And we're now living from, you know, hand to mouth, as opposed to living on credit the way we are now. Might the peaceful, might the more militant desperation physical protest might not be, you fill in the question. I mean, you know where I'm going with that? Is a violent revolution not inevitable? Once you know, the 85% of the people wake up instead of only the 15%.
Okay, well, do you want to die in a melee, or would you rather live somewhere apart from all of that?
Well,
would you rather, like, I don't know, the vision that I see is the people who just come to the realization, like, maybe they're freemen, and they just come to a realization that, hey, you know what, we really do need to separate from this, and instead of just engaging in the Titanic going down and trying to bail the water out, maybe we should just build our own communities for real and actually separate from it instead of continually perpetuating nonsense.
Can I come and say it? You're
like, there's
community?
A point where we're going to have to just give up and say, look, this isn't going to work. Like, we can fight and fight and fight and do what we can, you know, engage our representatives. The more people who do that, you know, it does make an effect.
You know, I have friends that have done exactly what you're talking about. They've, you know, some of them are actually literally living in the woods, you know, seasonally.
There's not enough of us right now.
That's
but
true.
Eventually, hopefully, I think that will be the answer. I think that will be the answer. If people want to stay and protest and be stuck in the cities and stuff like that and face all those dangers, then that's their prerogative. But I think that the real answer is 15, 20 years down the road will probably be true independence.
I'll tell you a secret. My retirement dream is to be able to do both. I'll go and live in the woods half the time and then make my way to the cities for my militant violent protesting.
Yeah, well, good luck.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Okay, caller, are you local?
I'm done.
All right.
Okay.
That's nice
talking to
you.
Bye.
Thank you. Okay, someone is calling on the other line. They can call the... someone's calling already. Is that a call? Yeah, it is. Hey, caller, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to call. I don't really want to get into it, but as a peaceful protester, I completely support Black Bloc tactics. I think that both are necessary for many points of view to
thank you.
Be shown. And, I mean, to expect that everybody is going to take on Black Bloc tactics is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And just as much as peaceful protest has its place, I mean, so do... standing up for freedom and standing against police brutality and standing against all the things that the Olympics were against. So thank
right.
you for being there, and I really appreciate your hard work.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Good call. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, no worries.
Right on. Okay, very nice. So that's the most positive response we've heard.
Yeah, better than last time.
Yeah. Holy moly, there's another one. Let's just... the phone line's hopping. Hey, welcome to the Unbought and Unbossed show. You're on air.
Yeah, hey, thanks. I just wanted to point out that the...
how you doing, Chris?
Yeah, not too bad. I just wanted to point out that the owners of this planet I think they're like utopian anarchists. And unfortunately, their great vision for their utopian future doesn't include us. And I can explain that. I think they're utopian anarchists because they make their own rules and they do whatever they want with this planet. And so...
You're talking about billionaires that are completely above the law, I assume?
Yeah, yeah. So they make their own rules and they got their own grand vision for this planet. And in their minds, that's utopian anarchy because they do whatever they want. There's no rules. And the planet's all theirs. Unfortunately, they plan on getting rid of all of us. That's the last remaining obstacle.
Hey, Chris, is there a way to stop that, doing it peacefully?
Yeah, that's a good question.
That is a good question, huh?
Isn't it, though?
I, for one, am not an advocate of violence, right? But I think it was JFK who said, those who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable or something.
And yeah, good one. Quote. That's right.
We saw what they did to him. They blew his head off. It. And whenever anyone has a populist peaceful revolution, they always blow their head off.
Mm-hmm.
Usually what happens. They respond to that populist movements with violence.
Yeah.
Usually.
Now, Chris, since you don't know Jeremy, is a real active, an outgoing activist. He's, constantly, he's a big flyer man. You know, he meets people on the street and gives them the 411.
Mm.
Chris, do you think you would have made a larger or smaller impact in Nanaimo since you work in this community hands-on if you practiced violence?
I'd probably be dead by now or in jail. If I had been going around doing violent acts.
we're speaking very broadly at this
like
point.
I've had police come to undercover police in black limos, come to my house flashing badges with black gloves on, wanting to ask me questions, you know, saying we've been getting complaints that you might be some kind of violent guy. And I'm going, oh, no, I think whoever was calling you has things backwards. Because if you read the flyers I've been hanging up, which apparently is what the complaint was about, my flyers.
Right.
The flyers said, we're advocating, expose corruption, stop the violence, peace and love, stuff like that. But apparently this was getting on someone's nerves and they complained that I'm some kind of violent threat or something. So it's like someone had something backwards, I think.
Yeah.
Perhaps they consider your ideas to be violent.
Yeah, so if I actually was violent, I don't know what would happen then. They'd probably just SWAT team me or something.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a military helicopter flying over Nanaimo today. You see that?
No, I missed that one.
Yeah. It landed at the helicopter, at the hospital of all places.
Was it like one of them black choppers?
No, it was a real big one, more like a transport style. It was a big one.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways.
Cargo one. Yeah, well, I just wanted to point out that I think the owners of this planet consider themselves utopian anarchists, and they got a great vision for the future of their own private planet.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it doesn't include us, so they can live like gods by their own rules.
Yeah, now they're willing to use violence in a different sense.
Safe to say I don't have much in common with those folks.
Yeah, so what worries me is that kids who get sort of herded into these violent actions are basically playing right into the hands of the power elite because now you're playing by their rules. They've done this for thousands of years.
True.
They're chess masters and they're the masters at violence. And so you got your agent provocateurs,
It does seem to benefit the police state. And where I was trying to go with the previous caller, the young woman. Is that, oh, shit, where was I going? Damn it. Carry on, Chris. I'll think about it.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm just worried about any time violence breaks out because, like Wayne Prandtl said yesterday, violence begets violence. Two wrongs don't make a right. Eye for an eye, leaves everyone blind and all that.
Yeah,
and I can see whenever there's violence, it doesn't take much for things to escalate, and then we got people getting killed And then that's all the police state needs to bring in the big guns and the...
Do you mind if I respond to this, Chris?
Sure.
Well, I just... And I've been thinking a lot about this since last time I was on the show. One of the things you brought up was that it was a wet dream for the
apparatus,
what we did. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is that that money is spent. Those guys are doing the police state thing, regardless of whether somebody enables them or not. It's going to happen. And, of course, they do get a publicity victory in the sense that they can plaster it everywhere and make an orgy out of it in that sense. But that money is spent anyway. They're going to be... It's the police state already, and a couple of anarchists isn't really going to change that one way or another. It's just a question of, you know, the ideas going out from it, and whether we can try and provide a counterspin to the obvious spin that you're going to see on the likes of the CBC and all the other mainstream media outlets.
Yeah, the way things are going, the only jobs that will be available will be security forces, running death camps, slave labor camps, I don't know.
Booming industry.
Yeah, people that get
vaccine
vaccines.
Injectors or eco-green Nazi carbon tax infractors and...
Yeah, and I mean, we're kind of snickering here, but unfortunately, you might have it right.
It's dark humor, sorry.
Where I wanted to go with that is the police state. In order to take the police state down, an armed rebellion I don't see happening. They've got all the guns. However, we're going to need the police state to literally step down, I think. And, you know, I mean, that might not be in the near future, and it might sound far-fetched, but I think realistically, if you sort through all the nuts and bolts, that's what is going to take to disarm the state.
The
state's enforcers have to step aside.
Well, I like the idea of winning the hearts and minds of the government and the media.
We're not
and
there
the,
yet,
the
though.
Cops and the military, but money is God, and everyone has got bills to pay, so you lose the battle every time for hearts and minds to money.
I think the writing will be on the wall if the economy completely collapses and all those paychecks dry up. That'll put a cramp on the police.
Yeah, if everyone loses their houses and their cars, then they won't be so...
But until then, it's a catch-22, you know?
It is. It's true.
Yep.
Okay, Chris.
Okay, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for the call, bro.
Good talking
to you, bud.
Okay, very nice. It is the top of the hour, 9 o'clock right now. I'm going to put on a minute and a half worth of advertisements. So hang tight, and we'll be back with Jeremy. It is 9 o'clock. Are you good to carry on for a little while?
I got nowhere else to be tonight, sir.
Okay, yeah, man. Well, the contract says I got to be in the seat for another hour. So right on. Okay, so Jeremy will be back in 2 minutes when we're back. All right.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Unbought and Unbossed Show. You're listening to CHLY. We're at 101.7 FM on the dial and it's almost live streaming. We'll call it live streaming on the internet at www.chly.ca. Someone keeps calling the office phone. Stop it. No one's going to answer that phone. I can hear it, and it's pissing me off. Stop it. You can call the on-air number. That would be nice. So call or hang up and call this. Area code 250-740-1017. That's to get in on the conversation with Jeremy and myself discussing... Well, really, Jeremy, we're kind of discussing a lot of different topics here. You know, this is much more, which I think is a good thing. I want to take it to the next level because, you know, I mean, the Olympics right now is, you know, soon going to be, you know, a minor footnote in the past. And there's bigger questions to deal with. And let's hope that this caller has one of them. Hey, caller, welcome to the air.
Hey, sorry to bug you. I didn't know of the online number to call, so that was me.
Oh, okay, well, thanks, me. It's ringing in the office. And thanks for calling. What have you to say?
Well, you know, I think that much more sort of provocative, subversive tactics are in order. When I was watching the whole Olympics thing play out, and I'm sympathetic to your... to what you guys are feeling. And I thought around the Olympics thing. I thought, man, you know, if they had, like, lined the corridor where the flame was going by, stood there anonymously, quietly, until the torch went by, and then donned black hooded capes or hoods or whatever.
I like the way you think.
I mean, it's just powerful. Like, who are these people? Like, my God, like, have the front lines, like, lined with these people, peaceful, standing there in black hooded you know, cloaked.
That reminds me of the V for Vendetta.
It's far more powerful, man. People want to know. It's like, whoa, what was that? There was no action. There was no violence. It's like, what is that about?
Huh.
And a lot of people that had political messages were being engaged in a peaceful fashion by people that were curious, and they were receptive to the information being dispensed. But when you have this kind of really intimidating, aggressive, anonymous group of people operating, you know, violently, it's really scary stuff. And not to say that what's happening in the bigger world right now isn't terrifying. It is. You just need way more provocative, subversive, nonviolent tactics to engage people.
Good. Jeremy, answer that, please.
Oh, I want to see all of it. I want to see all of that and more. I think there's room for everybody. There's absolutely more room in the streets. And any, I mean, that's beautiful. There's no question you would freak out a lot of
the
powers that be.
Way more thoughtful, mature sort of organization. I don't want to sound critical, but, I mean, what you guys are trying to address is really serious, complex stuff. And to engage the minds on the similar kind of a level, you're just going to have to be thinking real sharp. And what happens people kind of collectively look at people taking action with aggressive and anonymous. You just all get thrown into like a nut bar bag. People want nothing to do with it. And that's unfortunate.
Can I respond to that?
Yeah.
I've actually been thrown into this nut bar bag that you speak of in every different walk of politics I've ever engaged in. You know, whether I'm politely talking to people on the street or whether I'm chanting or holding a signboard or whatever it is I'm doing, there's always going to be folks that are going to call you a lunatic and
absolutely
walk away snickering.
But you want to engage them. You don't want them not to.
I
want
to engage people that I think actually want to talk to me. I don't bother anymore after years of doing this, engaging with the folks that are just going to wave their hand and laugh. And you know, there's a certain point where I just don't bother trying to reach someone, and I figure I'll just wait and see and let the economy do the rest for me.
But so long as you're being aggressive and violent and anonymous, so many people that you could engage and could inform and could educate will be lost. You're kind of preaching to the converted that understand that language that either want to jail you or join you. So it's kind of like a dead-end street.
Yeah, that's a really good point, caller, as a matter of fact. I think that what you're saying is those tactics are not going to increase the numbers of the 15% people that are woke up. It's not going to turn that 15
exactly
into 85. But you are suggesting more the civil informationing, you know, the more groovy way of dispersing information. That's how you're most likely to wake up other people to go for that 85%.
Yeah, and then watch, you know, be more provocative because...
Okay, but if there's just one idea that I could get across tonight, it's that I'm doing both. I spend the vast majority of my time doing, as Raymond says, the groovy information distribution. I mean, that's what I spend most of my time doing. I get like this one little moment where, you're right, I think we are preaching to the converted for the most part with the black bloc, and there's other kids out there that have reached what I like to call the fluck it moment, where they're ready to get angry and start getting really, really in the face of the powers that be, and those are the kids that see a black bloc action going on and are reassured.
Have you ever had the power of instigating a lot of anger with a lot of people and being responsible for it? It's pretty terrifying, man, and I hope you know what to do with it.
Well, I'd certainly, like, I think I've said before, I'm not interested in hurting other living things to make a point. I'm more than happy to hurt a living thing that's trying to hurt me first.
But a lot of people are so angry these days that if you stoke them and make them snap without having a more cogent game plan in place, what we have is, like, a mess.
Well, I know that this event on the 13th was portrayed in the media as a random occurrence, but I got to tell you, like I say, I went to organizing meetings. We spent a long time working on communications and recon and making sure that everybody was on the same page and talking about how we were going to protect people that didn't necessarily want to be involved in the violence and et cetera, et cetera. Like, I mean, the work is being done. They don't want you to know it's being done, but it's there, and we're getting better, and we're going to keep getting better.
So what happens to all the kids that let's say, aren't tuned up and educated and kind of enlightened by a lot of this sort of the undertow that's happening right now, but they're really angry and they got this free-floating anger. It's generalized, right? and they see an organization like yours, and they don't really care what your agenda is. They're just really PO'd, and they need an outlet, and they grab onto it. That's a mess, man. That is not good. That's not cool.
It's
that's
true,
not.
I mean, I'm not dealing with those people.
No, but
deliberately,
that,
and I haven't seen them yet.
Just one sec. How many would you guesstimate of the black blockers are fully informed the way I'm going to suggest that you and I are?
Well, I know that I've had a lot of really, really good conversations. Hanging out with these anarchists over the course of the Olympic Convergence it sort of breathed new life into me, all these incredibly intelligent people that I met in the span of a few days. I've heard that's just the nature of the summit protest. You're going to meet very colorful folks from all corners of the planet, and all of them are very well-read and very intelligent and able to hold their own. It was humbling for me.
So you're saying that the goon numbers would be very, very low? Of just guys there ready to punch a cop in the face.
Well, I mean, you know, there's some kids, and they're coming up, and they're perhaps so young that they haven't had the time yet to do some serious reading on some of this stuff, but I don't think there was any. And you know what? I would welcome the goons at this stage. I think if we get to the point where you're talking about some kind of mass movement that is mostly mindless goons, I mean, that's a bridge we can cross when we get there. We're nowhere near that right now.
That's a bridge you don't want to cross when you get there, man.
Well, fair enough, but I mean, it's a dot on the horizon right now, so.
Well, anyway, I'm totally sympathetic to a lot of what this program discusses. I'm right into it. And I'm definitely in the nut bag with you guys.
Yeah.
But I'd rather go inside buildings and work that way than stand on the outside throwing rocks at them.
Well, yeah. I fully support the work that you're doing.
Yeah, and I do support the work that you guys are doing, too. I think it's a really good conversation that we're having and that people continue to have.
Okay, well, that makes it all the while, then.
Okay, take care, man.
Thanks for the call.
You too.
Bye.
Good to you, Will.
Well, very nice. A lot of ladies, and that was sympathetic on both sides. That was interesting. The idea of that V for Vendetta idea, where everyone all of a sudden threw over their cloak with a mask of solidarity. That worked for me. I thought that was pretty neat.
I wish we had the funds to buy 10,000 masks and capes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, another call. It's nonstop. Let's take another call. Welcome to the Unbought and Unbossed show. How you doing?
Good. Hey, Jeremy, be careful. A minute ago you used the word violence, and you meant to say vandalism.
Oh, right. Well, yep. I mean, we've been talking about hypothetical violence, too. If those two are bleeding into one another, I apologize.
Okay, but that conversation, the last conversation, wasn't there, so just...
Okay, fair enough. What would you like to add to the show?
You guys are brilliant.
Thanks, man. I do what I can, you know.
Jeremy's so brave, and Raymond, yeah.
The fan club show is over, man.
Okay, bye.
He hung up, too. Holy
that was
shit.
Good for my ego.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there you go. Okay, we're taking phone calls. Someone is trying on the other line. Do me a favor and call this phone number, 250-740-1017. To jump off topic here, there was some talk amongst the internet researchers and bloggers and vloggers of a possible false flag attack in Nanaimo. For those who don't know, a false flag attack would be simulating a terrorist attack, blaming basically it could be anyone. The end goal would be to make sure that the police state apparatus stays. That did not happen. Thank goodness. I don't want to see any death myself, especially random death.
The last thing I want to see.
I'm sorry, man. We got a call. I'm going to take it. Hey, call. Oh, shit. Call back. I'll pick it up. So false flag operation. Had you heard about that? And what were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the theory. I mean, I've been hearing the theory tossed around for years, obviously, leading back to, the big one. But, I've been working with the good folks at the Agora, which is a independent tabloid publication out of Vancouver.
Yeah,
they wrote an article about it recently, or there was an article in the Agora, rather.
Okay, we're going to come back to that, the Agora.
Sure.
Caller, you're now on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Raymond, it's Dwayne from Cumberland.
From Cumberland. How you doing, Dwayne?
Real good. Yourself?
Just fine, buddy. What would you like to add to the conversation?
Well, I wanted to ask Jeremy. You caught my attention.
Hi, Dwayne.
Hi, Jeremy. The action definitely got people's attention.
It did.
What I felt was missing in the aftermath was, you've drawn all this attention to the Hudson's Bay Company.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about why.
Oh, well, it's
educate us.
It's a bright, shining symbol of colonialism and that wonderful legacy that we're all enjoying to this day. I mean, I could go into detail.
I'd love some detail. You know, there was no conversation erupted around that because there's been all this, you know, you've had to defend the action.
Okay, the Hudson's Bay, first off, is one of the prime sponsors of the Olympics.
Yeah, which ties it into the modern. And, of course, the Hudson's Bay was instrumental in colonizing Canada back in the day with, you know, the genocide and the colonialism and all that good stuff.
So it was a symbolic attack on their windows. And apparently there was a sympathetic windows broken in, was it Calgary, Edmonton, at a McDonald's. Is that correct?
I've heard of enough random solidarity actions across the country that I've lost track. There's been
okay.
at least a dozen of them over the last
okay.
year or two.
There we are. Okay, caller, was that enough explaining the Hudson's Bay, that they're making money on it now, as well as they have a pretty nasty past?
Yeah, I guess I want to support the action,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't, you know.
You're struggling with it.
The inner work that goes with the revolution, that's what I'm interested in. You know, so much of this outer calling attention to things, it seems to exacerbate confusion. Because people get caught up in the struggle and the drama.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, each and every one of us has to find the place in ourselves where we're able to act in the face of this monumental juggernaut that's coming after us.
Yeah.
And, you know, I spent some time with the Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh, who forged his philosophy and his way of life in the midst of the Vietnam War.
Oh, yeah.
And he came through all of that saying, there is no way to peace. Peace is the way.
It's awfully difficult for me to argue with a Zen master. I hope you're not... that's a little unfair. I'm going to have
to... I took it to heart, and it's been my choice... To follow that path. And
I think on an individual level, that's possible, but on a global societal level, is that possible? I'm asking you that question.
At a personal spiritual level, that's absolutely pure gold, but I just I have this rule about mixing politics and philosophy. I'm actually a very spiritual person, but it's oil and water when you try and mix philosophy and politics most of the time. There are exceptions, but that's my experience.
You know, I guess for me, I really go to this place where there's a fundamental choice. We're either living for peace or we're living for war.
Hmm.
I mean, every minor action, every minuscule action that we make that supports that that violent power over paradigm, you know, that small actions like... You know, I mean, you were talking earlier about the goon squads. I mean, I don't see a lot of difference. I mean, between what you're seeding now with the kind of activity that the attack on the Hudson's Bay Company was. I mean, you're calling for people to mass in a formation where the individual identity is lost.
Yes,
and
we call it facilitating autonomy by wearing a mask.
Right, and it takes away that individual responsibility as well, and you become this amorphous blob of action that
of gang mentality,
and,
no less.
Yes,
as well.
Exactly. And as one of the wise women earlier callers said, you know, I mean, there's a place where that is going to get out of control, and the mass that forms around that seed is going to do severe damage to all kinds of people.
You're putting me in a tough spot, Dwayne, because...
I'm glad.
Well,
you wanted engagement. You got engagement.
If I could give you a magic wand that you could wave to make all the violent people in the world disappear tomorrow, I would do it. That's your magic... Like, take the magic wand. It's free. It's yours. But there's an awful lot of folks out there that aren't even going to bother to stop to even talk to you before they break your face if you suddenly represent a real threat to the establishment, to the powers that be, whatever you want to call it. I've been doing this for a long time. I consider myself a spiritual, peaceful person on the inside. But at the same time, I've been pushed to the point where I felt like I just had to get much more proactive than just trying to talk to people. And that's been my journey. I don't know what else to tell you, Dwayne. I mean, I love reading the Zen Masters. I do. But like I say, it's oil and water when it comes to politics.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Dwayne,
yeah.
It's 20 after the hour. I need to do an update. You want to give us your website?
Oh, lightningpath.net.
Okay, lightningpath.net. There you are. Thank you, Dwayne. I'm going to shut you down now, bro.
Thank you, guys.
Good time out, sir.
Take care.
Be well.
Bye.
Okay, very nice. Jeremy, do you want to stick around? I do need to do a couple minutes of...
Yeah, do your thing.
Okay.
I'll hang out.
All right, I'm going to turn your volume off. I'm going to put on the community update song. I don't want to be a soldier. I don't want you to be a soldier. Now, we do have a special guest who is going to, cover, who is going to help us out with the campus community update. I'm going to make the phone call right now, and I've never done that. So, in the meantime, Jeremy's going to sing this song. No, just kidding, brother. Okay. Hang on, I'm making a phone call. And let me set this up a little bit. First off, we're going to be talking about the HST, the Harmonized Sales Tax. Will the people of BC take action against this, or will they simply gripe? The people of BC have a unique opportunity approaching. On April 6th, the official Fight HST People's Initiative begins. The regional organizer locally in the central Vancouver Island is Terry Hand. Terry's going to be on the phone as soon as I dial him up. Hang tight. Okay, John Lennon is going off. As promised, on the other end of the phone is Terry Hand. Oh, now, oh, shit. Damn it. Terry, call me right now. No one else call me. Terry only. Area code 250-740-1017. Terry, please call in right about now, buddy. I'll get John back on as we're waiting. Oh, no. Oh, okay, now it should be... Okay, Terry, call in. I'm talking to you, buddy. 740-117. Oh, shit. All right, I got another announcement. Well, Terry's... There we go. Very nice. Terry.
Hello, Raymond.
Hey, buddy. Thanks for calling back. I'm not too sure what happened there. Okay, so you are the Central Vancouver Island regional organizer to oppose the HST. Tell me what you have for us.
Well, basically, this initiative is starting on April 6th. This is a quite unique chance for BC voters to get their voice heard between elections. This Fight HST organization was, the initiative was proposed by Bill Van Der Zandt.
Right, that former premier of BC.
Yeah, the idea is that we have to get 10% of registered voters to vote against it in all 85 electoral districts. And if we can achieve that, then we can have a provincial-wide referendum.
Referendum, right, to defeat this.
Right.
Right. So why do we want to defeat it? What's give us a quick breakdown on why HST is not for us?
Well, it's gonna impact pretty well everyone in the province. It's gonna impact particularly the people that can least afford it, like old age pensioners. It's gonna impact small businesses who are already struggling under the economic environment.
So in many cases, it's going to double the tax, double the sales tax, correct?
Yeah, it's going to bring a lot more people onto the radar screen. I'll give you an instance. I'm a home-based business, and I've been in business since 1993. And part of my business I run in the summer, one arm of it, and I collect GST, but I don't have to collect PST. Once this new tax comes into force, then I'm going to have to increase my I'm going to have to add 7%, which is going to impact how me how people perceive my services.
Yeah. Good point. Okay, so now tell us what citizens can do, and so you are looking for canvassers to collect signatures that we might be able to get this to a referendum provincially to defeat it within BC's legal framework.
Correct.
Okay.
Elections BC is the governing body here, and we've now got official approval to go ahead with this initiative. And myself, I'm looking after four regions on the island, which includes Nanaimo, Parksville, Qualicum, Nanaimo, North Cowichan, and Cowichan Valley. And basically, what we're asking people is to ask themselves three questions. First of all, are you in favor of the HST? Are you in favor of, and this is a big question, because the media isn't exposing this. The big question is, are you in favor of allowing our BC government to transfer the authority to collect BC tax to the federal government?
Okay.
And this is what's being done. The federal government is basically grabbing the authority to collect that tax. Now, the last time that the provinces allowed the federal government to collect a tax was back in 1917, when they allowed them to collect income tax directly from Canadians. Before that date, Canada didn't have income tax. And even when they didn't have income tax, they provided roads and infrastructure. And they managed quite well providing the services. And so this is another attempt by Ottawa to take control.
Okay, so it's more than just a tax grab in BC. It's also a transfer of power to,
exactly.
to centrally.
Yeah,
okay.
And that's the other question that people have to ask themselves.
Okay.
And so if they're not in favor of those two items, then they need to do something about it, and this is their opportunity to do that.
Okay, so tell us specifically what people can do and what you're trying to collect them for.
We need to get what we're trying to do to set up in each of the electoral districts is we need four captains. Captains are involved in recruiting canvassers who can collect signatures, and then of course we need canvassers. So there's two positions here available. We need about 100 canvassers in each electoral district.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And what we're looking for, we just want people to ask themselves, can I collect 100 signatures on a petition in 90 days? If I can do that, then we can achieve this.
Okay.
We're already mobilizing right now across the province, and this was an idea to see if we could get some admin, or at least get the message out on the radio. I've sent it out to all the mainstream media outlets on the island.
Okay, and any response from them?
Not as yet. I sent them out yesterday.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's great.
It'll be, and I sent it more in the form of a letter to the editor. So we'll see where they go with that.
Okay. So people that are willing to spend, I mean, I think that you'd be able to get 100 signatures pretty quickly. You know, that doesn't sound like too many hours' work.
You know, Raymond, I can walk down my street tomorrow and get 100 signatures. I haven't found anybody that is in favor of this tax yet. Haven't got time just to read off some of the things that it's going to impact.
Yeah, we're going to have to make this quick and then give your contact on how people can contact you.
Okay, I'll just go through a few of them.
Certainly.
It's going to impact physiotherapy, veterinarians, reflexology, dietary supplements, vitamins, rent, strata fees, bus fares, membership fees, insulation. Like there's probably over 100 items that it's going to affect.
Right, those are more like broad sections as opposed to items. There's got to be thousands of items.
Yeah, and things like real estate. There's a gentleman up in Parksville, Bob O's, I believe his name is.
Okay.
He's got a website. He's a realtor, and he's got a really good letter on there showing that on a $400,000 home, I know that's a pretty pricey house for the average person, but it's basically showing that a $400,000 home, even after the $20,000 rebate, you're still looking at an extra $60,000 because of this tax.
No kidding. Holy. That's huge.
So what I'm asking is if people are interested in doing something,
yep,
to go to the fighthst.com. That's the official website.
Okay.
If anybody wants to call me, they can contact me at 250-756-9821.
Very nice. Okay, what was the website again? Give her one more time.
The website is fighthst.com.
Okay, very nice. So that seems like some fairly easy activist work that most anyone could do. So,
yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Terry. Do you have a final comment?
No, just that I've listened to your show from the beginning. It's been a really interesting show, and
sure,
thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you, Terry.
Good night.
Be well, partner. Okay, that was, in a funny kind of way, our campus community update, and that is being brought to us by the financial supporters behind the following fantastic groups, warcriminalsout.com, FalseFlagFlu.com, Roberts Creek Vice, no.com there. But the Vice is reminding us that silence is complicity. So that's a pretty nice thing. Very well, very well. Okay, Jeremy, you're back on air. We're going to wrap this up pretty quick. But let's keep this going for a short while. Maybe we got enough time for another phone call. Is there anything that we haven't hit that you're looking at as far as looking at black bloc techniques and a more violent style of protest? What's up with that?
Well, I guess I could leave off with one more word of caution to the baby boomers out there. For all of you that are completely baffled when you see violent protests and you're asking yourselves, where does this come from? What's wrong with these kids? I think unless drastic measures are taken to alleviate some of these wealth disparities that we're going to see over the next 10, 20 years, all the kids with half a brain are going to get angry, and once enough of them are fired up, the stupid ones will join in too. And you can't hire all of us to be police and rent-a-cops. The numbers just don't work. And this stuff really applies across the board.
Yeah,
we don't have much to lose. You're not listening to us, and worse, you're trying to tell us that it's our own fault, that we just need to go back to school and get deeper into debt. And, in a few short years, I think we're all going to laugh about how naive it was to get so bent out of shape over a few broken windows.
Right, yeah. I don't know if it was yourself or the letter that I read from in part to at the beginning of the show, basically said that, oh, son of a gun, I hate it when, I had my birthday last week, oh, I'm getting old over here. What the hell was my point?
You look good, though.
Thanks. As long as I sound good, thank you very much. The idea of, son of a gun, I forgot my thought again, shitty. Jeremy, save me, buddy.
I've used up all my material, Raymond. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay, we're digging the barrel. If you want to add your thoughts to the topic we've had tonight, right now will be the last time to do so. So if you would like to talk to Jeremy and I about violent protests and what they mean, what they don't mean, is it a good thing, is it a bad thing, what's going on with that, you can call area code 250-740-1017.
And you've got about 30 seconds to do that. I'll repeat the number, 740-1017.
It might be that we've had such an intelligent discussion tonight that there's nothing left to add.
Well, I'm
feeling pretty good about it.
Quite happy with what went down. I was going to make a joke. I was going to say...
No, do it. The, oh, wait,
we got a phone call, so I don't have to be silly. Thank goodness. All right, caller. Thanks for taking part. What have you to say?
Hi, Raymond and Jeremy. I just wanted to say, basically, listening to the conversation about the violent protests and so on,
mm-hmm.
I think that some of the people who don't like the idea maybe don't understand the fact that some people's tolerance level to having a stranglehold on your life or, you know, and so on is mm-hmm. Different. And the people who protest are angrier. And there's going to come a day when the stranglehold reaches those people who don't realize it yet.
Mm, so kind of as the belt tightens, more people are going to feel it.
Right.
I agree.
Exactly.
I get accused of being an angry person, and I don't think I am. It's strange. It always happens to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
anyway,
well,
that's just my thought on it.
I think.
Thanks very much.
Oh, well, thank you.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, that's a really valid point, and I think that's something that was partly talked on when I said hypothetically, you know, what's 10, 15 years in the future
mm-hmm.
as a continued economic, well, if, as some people say, you know, the dollars are being intentionally manipulated to crash them in which to further consolidate power. I mean, that's what all business is about consolidating power.
A new age of feudalism.
Quite literally. Mm-hmm. That will turn the tide, certainly, and that also takes us back to the question of if and when is violence going to be necessary? Is there another alternative as opposed to a violent revolution? You know, it's often said that a rebellion is considered a failed revolution, and so we're looking for revolution here, certainly.
Well, I certainly don't want to out myself with any opinion for or against violent revolution on this show. I know the time and place is not now, and I am contenting myself with much more aggressive information campaigns that take the form of, for instance, smashing a few windows in a very public venue when I know that the entire world is paying attention. And I will continue to take such opportunities. I know a lot of good activists will be heading east to Toronto for the G20 coming up this summer, and I look forward to a show there. We'll see. Some bad noise. Here's to hoping.
Okay. Very interesting. I think that is going to do it, Jeremy. I'd like to thank you for returning this week. And, you know, hell, you've been on for the majority of the show, which I wasn't expecting, but we've stretched it out, and it seems that the callers, that's what they wanted to have happen as well. So
yeah, thanks much, Raymond. It was a pleasure. I had a lot of fun, and it's reassuring to see there's some really sharp folks out there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, very nice. Yeah, so well done. I agree. Callers, thanks for your input. I value everything that we heard tonight. So, Jeremy, be well, brother. I'm going to put on an audio clip. Oh, shit, another call. Well, what the hell? We'll take that call. Hey, you just made it, caller.
Hey, I just wanted to add that, I guess. You're not angry. You're not paying attention.
Yeah, good point, man.
I'm told I appear very angry, so maybe I am actually a little angry.
I'm all for positive outlets for anger, though.
Exactly. Constructive rage.
Constructive rage, yeah.
Yeah. If you're not outraged, you're not informed, I think is how the saying goes.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Amen.
All right, Chris.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, brother.
Bye.
Okay, that's... if you're not outraged, you're not informed. That is a pretty... That's a kind of an interesting way to let the show down on. I'm going to take us to an audio clip now. This is from Deke. It is Deke, isn't it? Deke Jackson. I can't remember the name of the... maybe I'm not fully prepared on this, but this is from YouTube. Deke Jackson, D-E-E-K Jackson, New World Order Blues. That's what you're going to hear. And after that, I'm going to save this and put it straight onto the Frank Zappa interview from 1984. He basically, well, not he, he straight out says AIDS was man-made, and it's to target very specific people. And so, yeah, Frank Zappa, very outspoken. And this was 25 years ago as well, so wow.
Okay, so that's what you're going to get, some audio pieces, and I'll, that's pretty much going to do it for tonight now that I look at the time. It's 20 to 10. So I will definitely be back to say goodnight to you folks. So let's start off with Deke Jackson with New World Order Blues. Here we go.
Swine flu, global warming, terrorist bombing, chemtrail skies and WO, Zionism 2012, NEPA rule, oil Armageddon's coming for you. I just got here and so did you, but now we gotta save the fucking planet too. Economic woes, people waking up and saying, now I know. Shopping on the internet didn't change nothing yet. Never read much about what to do. Zionism 2012, Eva Rue. Oil Armageddon's coming for you. Depopulation, vaccination, demons in the spirit world and UFO. Nah, had enough conspiracy theories about the ship we're in and how deep is the hole. With a master making the grass green, no wrong or right, so what do you do? Deforestation, media manipulation, our extinction's making me blue. Everything wrong with the world is true, the problem is me and you. Sick and tired of hocus pocus, mumbo jumbo, gobbledygook. Good guys, bad guys, us and them, pick a side. For a war with nukes, everything wrong with the world, it's true. The problem is me and you. I just got here, how do you do? Now we gotta take a fucking planet too. Bought the wall with my credit card. It wasn't my money, so it wasn't hard. Went shopping for shit that I don't need. With a great low price of slavery and the war on terror, the big swine flu, the chemtrail skies and NWO, Zionism 2012, Eva Rue. All the Armageddon's coming for you. The war on terror, 9/11 lies and fake swine flu. It's tired of economic woes, waking up and saying now I know. I had enough conspiracy theories about the ship we're in and how deep it's a bowl. Sick and tired of hocus pocus, mumbo jumbo, gobbledygook. Got here, so did you. But now we gotta save the whole planet too. Something the internet didn't change nothing yet. You never read much about what to do about the population, vaccination, demons in the spirit world and UFOs. But with a mask on, making the grass green is no longer right. So what do you do when everything wrong with the world is the problem? I got solutions for these problems, but no reason for the night and day. And the way that it is in the way that it is. It is that way. Deforestation, media manipulation, our extinction's making me blue. Everything wrong with the world, it's true. The problem is me and you.
Another project of yours is called Thingfish, which is about, as I understand it, sexually transmitted disease. particularly amongst homosexuals, and I would say it was AIDS, if you like. Which...
Well, and this thing is called the mystery disease, but it's quite obvious that it is an AIDS-like disease, and it's been manufactured on purpose, and it's being transmitted on purpose, and the purpose is to rid the planet of certain people. I believe that AIDS, in reality, is not a natural accident. It's not a natural disease that just sort of evolved. Somebody cooked it up. I think that it's something that either escaped from a genetic engineering laboratory or something that was manufactured on purpose in a genetic engineering laboratory to somebody's specifications. I also believe that all the warfare of the future will be conducted with these biological agents, because now the gene splicing is a thing that can be done. It is feasible to consider the preparation of certain diseases which will kill only specific races, nationalities, or people with certain interests. Because you can tailor the disease to attack certain things in certain categories. For example, there are diseases now which affect only certain types of people. Tay Sachs disease, which affects certain Jewish people. Sickle cell anemia, which affects black people. If you want to narrow it down and carry it to ridiculous extremes, I could see somebody in an American laboratory, or maybe even in a Swiss laboratory, making a disease that would kill only Iraqis, or only Iranians, or only Libyans, or only Russians, or only people from Newcastle, whatever they decided to do. You know?
But these are very serious allegations, Frank. I mean, what actually makes you believe this? Do you have hard and fast evidence that this is the case, or is it just something that you've...
No, this is just the opinion of an aging buffoon. You know? Just think nothing of it.
So, you think that possibly America or any other country in the world could... increase its power and its standing internationally by actually utilizing these agents?
Let's look at the world the way it really is. Government is a joke. Governments don't do anything. That's like a cardboard cutout that hides where the real machinery is. The world is a place that does business. The world is run by multinational businesses that mostly sell weapons to each other, and then you have sugar business, oil business, coal business, you know, business. And when the guys who run these things say jump, all governments jump. And it's foolish to consider the possibility of nuclear war, because from a business standpoint, it's impractical. It stops all business. So, the way you have to look at it is, the chances are much more likely that the sales will continue of missile delivery systems, but what will be in the warheads will not be things that destroy real estate. It's much more practical to think of missiles going someplace and putting out chemicals or microbes that enable the one party to subjugate the other party by controlling its labor force while leaving the buildings intact. So you've subjugated them, and now you got a bonus, you have their machinery, you got this, you got that. And I believe that there's somebody sitting in an office someplace that's working on it, then that's the practical way to do it. You can scream about nuclear war and you have people running around with signs and stuff like that, but I don't believe there will ever be a nuclear war, because it's just impractical from a business sense. Meanwhile, the companies that are building delivery systems are making plenty of money, billions of dollars, because the money goes into small arms delivery systems, medium-sized arms. Their commerce is still going on, and that's why they're alive. That's what they love to do.
Yeah, that's already been borne out by missile systems that have been developed that do, in fact, destroy people and not buildings. I take your point there. But if you take somewhere as complicated as America, which is a real potpourri of different religions, different races, you're going to have a mighty complicated missile to have to destroy the people of America, because you've got Jews, you've got Anglo-Saxons, you've got all sorts of different races. So doesn't the argument kind of fall down there in that, as I say, you'd have to actually develop a really complicated missile to destroy
America? Russians would have to develop a really complicated missile to destroy the United States. The Americans would not have so much trouble. And under an administration like Reagan, I'm sure that they've sat down and looked at the numbers and said, this is a pretty terrific idea.
Having said all that you just said...
Wait, so there's more. They not only thought it was a terrific idea, but they were convinced that Jesus wanted them to do it that way.
Right. Fair enough. Having said all that you have said, does it make you ashamed to be American?
Absolutely not, because I I want to say right now, I'm happy to be an American, and I have nothing to do with Ronald Reagan. The way he and his Jesus people are has got nothing to do with me being a citizen of that country. Let me tell you one great thing about America that everybody in Europe could be jealous of. For the landmass that we have versus the landmass of the European part of the world, you have more hatred per square foot from country to country than exists anywhere in the United States. The idea of the ethnic pride and the grudges that go back thousands of years that will keep this part of the world a disaster area for centuries yet to come is something that we will not experience in the States. And I'm happy to be from there rather than from here, because over here you have to choose. You get to be English, or you get to be French or Polish or whatever it is, but you have to say we're the best, and you live your life thinking that you're the best and the guy next door is a poot head, and you have to conduct your business that way, and it's the business of hate. There's no cooperation, there's no standardization, and you can insulate yourself and think that what you're doing in your country is really terrific, but it's not. Ultimately, it bites. And in the United States, weird as it is, there is always the possibility that something good could happen all the way across the country. There is a national feeling there among a large number of people, even though the guy from Vermont might have totally different tastes and politics and everything else from the guy in Texas. They are still Americans, and they're happy to be that way. You don't hear people saying, I am a European and proud to be that way. You hear them say, I'm French, and the rest of you guys go die.
Do you ever get tired of being treated as something of a rock and roll oddball or eccentric?
Well, it's always boring, but, I mean, that comes with the territory. I would rather be treated as an eccentric than have to do the things that people do in order to be treated as one of the real guys. You know, that's stupid. I'm not going to grow purple hair or wear clothes with a diagonal zipper on it, you know, and sit around all day going...
But it's a tremendously powerful mainstream in America, isn't it? I mean...
Well, who wants to swim in that?
Exactly.
It moves toward the Christians.
But I wonder what you really did feel about that, because we, on our program, get a lot of videos over from America, and they do seem very formularized, and it must be very difficult for somebody like you to actually be able to survive and create some sort of living within that.
Why, it's next to impossible.
So how do you cope? You just go against the grain?
Well, my theory is you do have to do two things. One, you keep going. One, you don't stop, and two, you keep going. And then you get whatever comes up.
But now the reason I asked was because you've been talking about your independence and how valued it is. And by signing to a big corporation, which is very powerful not only in entertainment but in defense and a lot of other areas as well, mm-hmm. you might lose that independence and you might actually...
How? All I do is deliver a product to them, and all they do is distribute it. They don't tell me what to record, when to record it, or anything. The work is already done in the United States. They pay me for the privilege of shipping it around outside the United States.
Okay. Frank, finally, I'd like to ask you...
Actually, I've got a great idea. Maybe we can find some way to work the defense. I know they only make defensive weapons, but that would be a great delivery system for an album. You know, what a way to release an album. You know, for those hard-to-get-to areas, you know. And it's a good way to test the missile to see whether it actually will fly, because in the United States we have all these missiles on the ground, but they have these computer chips from Texas Instruments, and we don't know whether they're going to go anywhere. So EMI Thorne has the possibility to rush release this album, which they're a little behind on. They have a chance with four missiles. They can test the missiles, and we can, you know, have a committee meeting and choose the right country to aim the things at and send a sucker over there. Just a few of them in the warhead, and it would be a really great way to tie the two companies together.
Frank, I'm sure the marketing boys are working on that even as we speak.
I hope so.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, there we are. Frank Zappa talking about a lot of things there, including AIDS being hatched in the... hatched in a laboratory and race-specific, group-specific anyways. So, friends, that is going to do it for tonight's show, the Unbought and Unbossed show. Sandeep's up next. Where are we going to go? Let me tell you that I do archive my shows. You can listen to them or find out what was on, you know, the specifics. You can visit unbossed.livejournal.com. That's unbossed.livejournal.com. I also have a Facebook page under Raymond Geisler, as well as a Facebook page, Unbought and Unbossed Radio. So, there we are. Thanks to everyone for calling in. A lot of intelligent discussion tonight, I'd like to think, and Jeremy for coming in. So there we are, friends. Be well. We'll see you next week.